Welcome to Sideline Judgment. My name is Sergio,
My name is Tyler.
and today we are joined by a very special guest, the one and only, a good friend of ours, friend of the pod, Mr. Zach Gowdy. Zach, how you doing, man?
Good. What's up?
Doing good. Zach, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, what your thing is, and why we brought you on the pod today to discuss the greatest game on earth.
Well, I'm Zach. I went to college with Tyler and Sergio. I'm an avid sports fan. And right now, I ain't doing nothing. But I'm here to talk about sports, and I've been trying to get in the show for a while now, so I'm excited to be here.
Well, the reason I just we decided to bring you on this week is because it's our first episode after the beginning of the World Cup. I had a huge World Cup preview episode, and Zach, you are my resident England friend. You are the resident member of the Three Lions fan club that I fall on, and so I wanted to, ask you a few questions about the Three Lions when we get to the World Cup stuff, and I wanted to hear your take on, because it's different, because we're from three culturally different areas. Tyler is from Jacksonville, which is a whole other monster on its own. You're from England and also South Florida. Shout out West Palm, and I'm a Hispanic American from Broward County, so like we have different views on what we consider to be, high quality sports and our opinions and stuff. So it's nice to have that diversity. Before we go ahead and start with the World Cup section, though, Tyler, there's a couple things in the NCAA, and they're not little things; they're pretty big. Which I think on a week that didn't include the World Cup might be all we're talking about on an episode.
Yeah, if the World Cup wasn't a thing this year, this would probably be the major point.
100%.
So two rules were passed by the NCAA regarding mostly college football, but just re regarding sports, the big one that came to my mind is the whole red shirt rule. So now you can play as a player in college football, you can play up to four games and still keep your red shirt. So it's not anymore that like, oh, a freshman plays one snap, their red shirt's gone. They have played that year. Now you can play a freshman in three games, see what he's good, and if you don't think he's good yet, you can just sit him the rest of the year and he can still keep that fifth year of eligibility. So I think that's huge because that helps a lot of teams with just kind of development of players. And I think that the red shirt rule is a little archaic in the sense that
Oh,
like
well. Go ahead. Let me finish. Sorry.
Well, what I meant is like the old version of it where it's like you play one snap, you waste an entire year.
Okay, I agree with you on that. Now, my
Like,
what
I agree that. Yeah, go ahead.
I was gonna say, what I'm kind of, I like where we're going. I just feel like we took it a little too far. I think up to four games is a bit too much because that's in often cases a third of the season. I think that's a little too much. I would have been a much bigger proponent of redshirt of players can play up to two games, but you can only limit them to the opening game of the year and a bowl game slash the last game of the season. Because then that way what happens is you can start at the beginning and say, okay, let's see if this player's up to speed or whatever. You get like a test run, kind of like a preseason game that the college football doesn't have. And you can also, if a season's over, kind of like the Felipe Frank situation that we had 2 years ago, where it was like, do we play him in the bowl game? Do we keep his year of eligibility? You know what I mean? When we knew for a fact that we needed to test out new quarterbacks, but we ended up not doing it.
I thought that when this rule, I didn't think this rule would get passed the way it was.
Neither did I.
I thought that I knew it was the rule on the table because coaches really want this. Coaches really want to be able to use their players as much as they can.
Of course.
But I thought that it was just going to be strictly to bowl games because it kind
That's
of makes
right.
sense.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
Bowl games aren't scheduled at the beginning of the year. So they say that if you, I thought originally they were just going to be like for a bowl game, you can throw out the eligibility questions, anyone can play. But I was surprised that it went all the way to four games.
Me
Zach, do you
too.
have any feeling about this?
Not really. I just want to see some kids play. I mean, I'm more about
That's
kids
real. I like
paid, to be
that.
honest, but anything right now to make sure freshmen get in there and get a snap, I'm all for it. But
Without limiting their exposure and
yeah,
their.
but my big thing about the NCAA is still then get in there, get paid.
Mm-hmm. Which is a whole nother.
Yeah.
We could have a whole podcast
on that.
But, you know, this doesn't particularly, you know, bother me.
Mm-hmm.
Another.
Are you going to move on to the second rule, or can I finish up on the transfer?
Go ahead.
On the redshirt. I think this is also interesting because if this rule was in place 3 years ago, Shea Patterson would have an entire extra year of eligibility to play at Michigan. I just want to point that out. That's how big that this rule is. He has 2 years of eligibility, but because he played in four games the year that Chad Kelly went down, he would have still been able to have a whole nother year of eligibility to play, which is wild to me. But yeah, so go ahead and Tyler, give us the second rule that was passed, which in my opinion is much, much, much bigger.
Much
bigger.
I think this next rule is more impactful, and to me, I'm a huge fan of this rule.
Mm-hmm.
So the other ruling that the NCAA passed was that the NCAA said that schools can no longer block players from transferring.
Amen.
Now, I think this is a huge win for players. Now, the big thing to understand about this is that as a student, a player can transfer to any school they wish. Just the issue is that if the school doesn't want them to transfer there, if it quote unquote blocks them, what that means is that if the student decides to transfer, they have to pay their way. They are ineligible to receive financial aid. So they can't get a scholarship. So this takes away a school's ability to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And now players can choose if they want to transfer, they can choose to transfer where they wish.
Does this mean that, for example, let's use Florida players, which is a situation that the three of us are familiar with. I know for a fact when a Florida player wants to transfer out, he cannot transfer to a team in the SEC or a team on the schedule within until the point where he graduates. Does this mean that those restrictions are gone as well?
From the individual school's perspective, yes. So interconference like rules, like an SEC's overall rules on like player transfers or the conference's overall rules, those haven't changed. But the University of Florida as an individual school, to my knowledge, cannot now say you cannot transfer to Georgia or you cannot transfer to Kentucky.
Okay, so this is good. This is bigger then. So this is sprung on from the series of Alabama players that wanted to transfer to Georgia and Alabama said, no, we don't want you to go.
Yeah.
Okay, I see what this
is. And I'm a huge proponent of letting players go where they want.
I completely agree. I feel like if as a student, I have the luxury of saying, you know what, this is not working out for me at this institution. I want to go to a different institution. Granted, there's less athletic scholarship or, you know, situations to play in our situation, but still they're student athletes. They're not professional. If you're going to treat them like professional athletes on everything except for compensation, then you need to start treating them like professional athletes in terms of freedom of their mobility and freedom of their branding. You know what I mean? You can't be restricting them in that sense. Yeah. Go ahead, Zach. You have something to say?
Hit the nail on the head by the distinction. It's student athlete.
Mm-hmm.
It's still like for you to start messing up with financial aid and stuff like that. Like
exactly.
You know, if as a student athlete, if I feel like this school I'm at, this institution is not right for me, if my playing time is being significantly cut or I'm not getting on the squad sheet, that if I want to go somewhere else to play and continue my education for a school to be like, you can't go here and to dictate where I go. I mean,
mm-hmm.
This is a long time coming.
I feel, and I completely agree with you. And
the main argument against this from a lot of people that I've seen is just that like, well, it's one of those, you can't just have a player go from Georgia to Auburn. They'll spill all the secrets. Like you don't want players to see this rivalry, which like is just a product of paranoid coaches. Mm-hmm. And my response to that is you're getting paid millions of dollars. Figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Like deal with it. You're getting paid millions of dollars to coach. You can let one player go to your rival school.
Agreed. Completely agree. I just think we need to just be, the NCAA needs to just be honest with itself. Like, if you want them to be student athletes, then treat them that way. But if you're going to expect them to be professional athletes at a student level, then you got to make sure that they have You got to make sure that they have the liberties of all other students. You know what I mean? Like, just be real with it. Be upfront with
us. I agree.
Okay, with that being said, Zach, anything else you guys want to say about this?
I was just thinking about, like, I don't know, kind of playing devil's advocate with, like, I mean, we are training these athletes for the real world, you know, and the idea that coaches are scared about their secrets and all of that getting out. I know, I think that as a coach, develop a new secret. I mean, you're there, tactics and figure things out during game time. I mean, create a new tactic. When this kid leaves, you're like, okay, I'm going to fill the hole, figure out how to get around that. And I think what happened is, you know, we've stopped treating it as if it's a student competition, and we're treating it more like it's its own league, which I understand. I mean, there's a lot of money in it, millions, trillions, like, you know, but it's not professional. And I think they need sort of a downgrade idea. Understand, like, where we're sitting right now, that we are dealing with students, that if a student wants to go somewhere else, they have the right to, and we can't start messing with their money.
Yeah, that's my big thing. Don't... You're out here messing with financial aid and people's livelihoods, and
that to me is a huge part about it, because I mean, my whole thing is, well, my philosophy is, you know, if you break your leg, at least you have your degree.
Correct.
If you get injured, at least you have your degree. So if you're now messing up both the fact that I'm putting my life on the line to play football,
quite literally.
You know, I'm risking my life quite literally every Saturday for you. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, I'm not getting paid. On top of that, games and all types of other licenses can use my likeness without my consent. And then on top of that, you know, you're now telling me I can't go to this school because...
No.
Rival, but I know I'm going to get game time out there. Like, you're not leaving anybody with any freedom to do anything, and that's what's crazy to me.
Yeah, I feel you. Speaking of freedom to do anything, I think that's a great transition to Kawhi Leonard, because honestly, who knows what's going on with Kawhi Leonard? Who knows what's going on with Kawhi Leonard? News broke on a Thursday morning. News broke last Saturday, something. Honestly, because of the World Cup, the days have kind of meshed into one. News broke earlier this week, confirming, saying, and it was Woj, which Adrian Wojnarowski, who is by all means the basketball news breaking god, anything he says is true. And he said that it is official, everything we've expected is that Kawhi Leonard wants out of San Antonio. Now, I think this is the perfect time to talk about what's going on with Kawhi. Let me give a little preface right here. Kawhi Leonard played 9 games last year. He had a hamstring tear or hamstring strain the year before, and he had problems towards the end of the year. He was a top 3 player in MVP voting. He had what they, you know, his breakout season. You know, Duncan had just retired. It kind of like, it seemed like he took over the reins and everything was good to be expected. Then he gets hurt. What happens then?
MVP.
He should have gotten MVP.
No, finals MVP. You're forgetting finals MVP.
Oh, okay, but he was fine. I think I'm just forgetting to acknowledge the fact that the Heat lost that finals, and that's when LeBron left. But moving forward.
I mean,
we should have Zach on the pod more often. I like that he keeps bringing these things up.
MVP. I mean, like,
all right, fine. Finals MVP. Finals MVP. No, but then Kawhi, it seems like he's cleared to play, and he just didn't play. And there was a rift. There was a point in the season where Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker basically called him out in public. And what came out of this report this past week was that Kawhi was not happy with that. He didn't want to meet with anyone. The question is, he has a huge he was offered a much smaller endorsement deal with Jordan Brand than his peers. And a lot of it is said that they think it's because he's in San Antonio and he's not in a big enough market to get the big one. People say, oh, but Russell Westbrook got a huge Nike deal and stuff, but he's in Oklahoma City. And the theory is that his personality is so brash and so strong that he transcends the market. Kawhi's quiet. Kawhi shows up to work, does his thing, embarrasses everyone, and goes home. You know, this is from a man that he's one of those people that when he got in the NBA, he didn't buy a car or whatever. He stayed with his car work, so therefore he's not going to trade in his car, you know? His idea of moving into a big house was an apartment to a single-family style home, you know? And the man's making millions of dollars playing basketball. So the question is, where does Kawhi go? He's got 1 year left in his contract with the Spurs. Do the Spurs trade him now knowing that he won't re-sign with them? Do they trade him within the Western Conference? All the rumors is that everything is pointing towards Los Angeles because he's from LA, he wants to play for the Lakers apparently. But Popovich, there's no way he's going to trade Kawhi to the Lakers and strengthen them and let the end of his legacy. Side note, it's rumored that Pop is going to want to retire in 2020 and have the end of his legacy be helping create the NBA's next super team. You know, why would he want to do that? Especially when there's rumors that LeBron might go to LA. Could you imagine LeBron and Paul George signing max contracts and then Kawhi being acquired in a trade? Like, Zach is shaking his head right now. That's insane. And so, like, Pop doesn't want to be a part of creating that. So my question to you is, gentlemen, Tyler, Zach, if you are the Spurs, how do you handle this situation? Zach, I'm going to ask you to go first, and then Tyler, I want to hear your opinion. It's difficult.
I don't know, like, I have so much respect for Pop, mm-hmm. and I feel like he's such a gangster that he's got a way to rinse Kawhi for all his work. Mm-hmm. He's gonna find some way to mm-hmm. get that dude to play and just finish out his contract. But I mean, we're in a market now where players can literally do anything. I mean, mm-hmm. Brown set the precedent for that, and with the, you know, the Players Association, you know, players can literally do anything at this particular moment. So, I mean, I heard yesterday, I was watching First Take, and they said that Pop doesn't want to, the Spurs aren't going to sell Kawhi to any team in the Western Conference. They want to send him
East. Which I understand.
Which, yeah, totally makes sense. But, I mean, the West is where it is. That's where you win championships. Mm-hmm. And so, at least right now, you know? And so, mm-hmm. why go to LA? I don't know what you'd have to do. I mean, the odds are that LA is going to make it happen. Mm-hmm. And
But what if you're the Spurs GM? What do you do? Do you trade him away? Do you let him sit out his contract? What do you do? Because he's got 1 year left. So you got to trade him now so you can get assets for him rather than getting nothing for him when he walks next year.
You kind of have to trade him, try and rebuild, try and find a way to strengthen your squad. Or at least trade him for somebody else, like somebody big. Mm-hmm. Marquee signing that will strengthen Spurs and you know, to him to where he wants, you know, wants to be. But he's probably gonna have to do a Paul George. He's probably gonna have to go somewhere for a year, sit it out, and then
see what happens.
Next year, try and get to where you want to be. I don't think it's gonna be a straight shot for him.
Mm-hmm. Tyler, what do you think? If you were the Spurs GM, what would you do?
I think that you have to trade him to an Eastern team. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But because if you're the Spurs thinking about yourself, like he's not gonna play for you if you make him stay. Mm-hmm. For that 1 year, so you got to get something out of him, and you got to trade him to an Eastern team because you don't want to run into him in the playoffs
at all,
and you just don't want to strengthen your competition, and it sucks. But yeah, I think I agree with Zach is that they're going to send him someplace that is not where he would technically want to go.
Yeah,
because I feel like it's weird. I feel like had he played more than 9 games, they might even be more cooperative about this, but I feel like the Spurs just don't care at this point.
Mm-hmm. Like, about it's the disrespect. It's you're healthy. You can play. Mm-hmm. And for you to sit out all 81 games and then be like, oh, I want to go to Lakers. And they're like, what did you say?
the thing here is that he's healthy. He's cleared to go.
Cleared to go.
He just hasn't played for them. Now here, let me tell you guys what I would do. First of all, I want to point out that resident Spurs fan Shea Serrano, who is a outstanding follow on Twitter. If you guys haven't followed him, I highly recommend you do. He represents to me the Spurs, and I was listening to a podcast with him and Bill Simmons talking about Kawhi, and he said that Kawhi is now enemy number one. He says that if Kawhi leaves, the first game that he comes back will be worse than when Kevin Durant went back to Oklahoma City in terms of the fan treatment, which is a lot. Now, number two, rather than take this from the approach of the Spurs general manager, I'm going to take this from the approach of Pat Riley. And I'm going to tell you, Pat Riley should send Hassan Whiteside, James Johnson, and a future draft pick unprotected for Kawhi Leonard. That's a specific trade I want. I don't know if it'll work, but that's what I think. That's what I would do if I was a GM. I'm just dreaming.
The Heat fantasy is really buzzing on that idea, but I don't want to lose Hassan Whiteside.
Oh no! See, that's where I'm in a different camp. I'm in a different camp with you.
Sergio feels completely differently about that.
Completely differently, Zach.
I feel that with more coaching, he could be one of the dominant centers in the NBA.
I feel like
I just focus is off.
Okay, I feel
and
I get
for
it.
For me, I wouldn't want to. I mean, it's hard to come by centers now.
Mm-hmm.
I like good ones that can give you a double-double every night.
I get you, but I feel like basketball has changed into more wingers at the four that can hit threes and play defense are more valuable than the center now. And I feel like if you can pull the trigger on Kawhi, I don't think they do it because they have LaMarcus Aldridge, but one can hope, one can dream, you know?
Honestly, send him to Cleveland. Keep LeBron there.
Okay, that is a rumor. That is a genuine rumor. I just don't think that, A, the Spurs want to get rid of Kevin Love, who would have to be a part of that deal. B, they have the contract, the room.
You don't want to get rid of Kevin Love?
No, I just don't think... No.
I don't think Cleveland wants to
get rid of Kevin Love. And I don't think the Spurs would want to take him on. Because, again, Kevin Love would play next to LaMarcus Aldridge, and that would be kind of an interesting... They've really invested well in LaMarcus and done a good job there. But yeah, that's a speculation. So we're all in agreement that we would trade.
But I disagree about Kevin Love.
I think
get rid of Kevin Love.
I don't disagree with you, but I'm saying, you know, that's what I think Cleveland would do.
Is that Spurs wouldn't want to pick up Kevin Love.
Sorry. Then again, you know, when have we ever seen the Cleveland franchise do anything competent? moving on. Okay, before we get into our World Cup week review, Tyler, we have our favorite segment, or I think it's my second favorite. I kind of like moments of the week a little more. But it is our tweets that we've shared, Tyler. I'm going to go ahead and have you go first. Zach, this is a moment where Tyler and I go through our Twitter DMs where we've sent each other throughout the week, and we discuss our favorite one. Tyler picks a tweet that I sent him, and I pick a tweet that Tyler sent me. So, Tyler, go ahead and pick your tweet of the week, or tweet you
sent. I love this tweet so much that he sent me. It's by, where is it? At Paola Janet, and it says I'm 100% convinced my grandma was the reason Mexico won, and it's a video of a grandmother as it's going through the broadcast of the World Cup, and Mexico is singing their national anthem. It's panning through the players, and she is blessing them with the sign of the cross as they go across the screen, and it is amazing.
I absolutely loved that tweet. I was dying because that's the kind of stuff like my mom would do that. Like before, not sports related, but like before a big event with like my brother and I. So like we have the SAT, and she goes, okay, you're gonna do good on the SAT. Give me the sign of the cross and everything. I'm like, okay, mom, got it, cool, thank you, appreciate it. But just for like this Mexican abuelita to go in and do the sign of the cross to every Mexico player before a World Cup game is just everything that I needed in my life and more. Inject it into my veins.
She like went up to the TV and like they were right in front of her. It was just like,
you know my favorite part about that was Memo Ochoa, who's the goalkeeper, he got three quick signs of the cross. The goalkeeper.
Oh.
She knew.
Clean sheet. Coincidence.
Today.
Of course he did. Okay,
yeah, that's my tweet. That I love that one so much.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I have my tweet that you've shared. Comes from Gianna, at Gianna Thomas. And it is, we can only watch World Cup on Telemundo in our room. And I guess my main question is, why would anyone want to watch the World Cup on any station but Telemundo? Because this commentary is a delight. And I'm just saying this a little bit out of bitterness, because my whole life, obviously, because, you know, there's only been a few World Cups in my life so far. But ever since I started watching the World Cup seriously in 2010, in 2006, I had an interest and I knew it was happening. And when the games were on, at that point, they were on Univision, which is the Spanish network. And then in 2010, I watched most of the coverage on Univision. What I would do, though, was I like the post-game analysis that the English, that ESPN had during 2010 and 2014. So I would watch the game in Spanish on Univision and then flip to ESPN to get the post-match coverage because they had really high quality. And honestly, I'm in West Virginia right now, finishing up a contract. And I do not have access. Telemundo is here. It's just my cable package at this apartment they're hooking me up on does not have the channel. So I have to watch the World Cup games on Fox and Fox Sports 1, which is unfortunate for me. And honestly, that leads me to saying that I'm very disappointed with Fox's World Cup coverage. Their analysis is not really analysis. I watched their like World Cup Tonight show the first three nights, and I was not pleased. There isn't the tactical nuance that I expected from a World Cup evening wrap-up show. It's very much geared towards like flashy, to me, the World Cup is the game itself can be geared towards like people who watch it every 4 years and, you know, just this big cultural experience. But the wrap-up shows at night, those got to go into the tactics. They got to be figuring out why Argentina played two holding midfielders. Why did Morocco's counterattack work so well? What is wrong with the finishing on this? Who's, you know what I mean? Like, it's got to be that tactical aggression, which I know, Zach, I spent a month in London last year during World Cup qualifiers. And for a World Cup qualifier, the British press and the BBC and Sky Sports had that kind of coverage. And across the globe, other countries have that kind of coverage and stuff. And if we want to become a true footballing nation, we need to have that level of soccer intellect being given to our people and not treating them like, oh, well, they don't know any better. No, you don't know that. Put it on, you know? Show them what it's actually about. But yeah, no, I'm 100%... mourning the fact that I can't watch any games in Spanish until I go visit my uncles in Virginia. Oh, man. But I guess that is a good way to... Well, first of all, we're going to wrap up Tweet Tweet Share. Thank you very much. That was another episode of Tweet Tweet Share. Let's go ahead and...
I was going to say, just to add to your point, that like just to hammer it home, is that like as the resident not-soccer expert here, another way you can tell that Fox's, you know, shows aren't really doing much, I haven't learned anything.
Yes.
Like, I've watched a lot of soccer in the last week, and I loved it, and it's very fun. I don't understand any more tactics today than I did last week.
My favorite part about the 2014 or 2010 World Cup was watching Bob Levy, Taylor Twellman, Ruud van Nistelrooy, Michael Ballack, and Roberto Martinez every night sit down and break down tactically the games. You had Ruud van Nistelrooy and Michael Ballack and Roberto Martinez sitting there breaking down formations. You had Taylor Twellman breaking down different types of press. And Bob Levy is a narrator whose background is in soccer, or I'm sorry, is a elite commentator whose background is in soccer. So he knows what he's talking about. You know what I mean? So he can facilitate those conversations properly. I'm very disappointed, and I can't wait for the... I liked Fox's in-game coverage of the MLS and of national team games and stuff, but I really think they, and the Champions League, but they really dropped the ball on the World Cup in this sense, which is, I'm disappointed. Moving on to the World Cup, let's go ahead and talk about that. So this first week was quite the crazy one, to say the least. Currently leading the Golden Boot race is Own Goal, who has six goals. There have been six own goals in the first round of the World Cup. I'm really excited for Own Goal to win the Golden Boot.
I wonder if that would actually happen.
There's no
one. I kind of need that to actually happen.
That would be fun, though. This is where I'm going to go ahead and pass on some of the analysis points to Zach. Zach, I'm going to go ahead and start with the biggest game, I think, of the tournament so far. Portugal 3, Spain 3. I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. Cristiano Ronaldo 3, Spain 3. Because Ronaldo is on one. I got a text from you saying, Ronaldo's the GOAT. And I
lost my mind.
As everyone knows, I'm very actively Messi over Ronaldo. And one World Cup is not going to change that. But let me preface this. If I ever get to the point where I'm like, you know what, I just have to pick Ronaldo over Messi, on a pure efficiency rating, not in a personal preference, but just acknowledging, yes, Messi or Ronaldo is a GOAT. Got it. I understand it. I would look back at that 3-3 game and say, that was the moment that sealed it. That was it. That was the moment. And the crazy thing about that game is that we talk about Ronaldo's free kick at the end of the game, which to me, and I was talking with my stepdad who's seen a lot of soccer in his life, that's the second greatest free kick of all time. Behind Roberto Carlos's outswinger that went all the way around the Brazilian.
We're talking about in the World Cup or just ever?
For sure the World Cup, because the Roberto Carlos one was in the World Cup as well.
Best in the World Cup I've seen.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen that goal. That free kick was memorable. It's gonna be memorable. I'm gonna tell my kids. They'll be like, "Oh, what a free kick!" And I'll be like, "Yeah, but one time Ronaldo was in the World Cup and there were 2 minutes left in the game and he took the ball."
That Ronaldinho 2002 was another.
Okay, I'd have to go back and look it up because that one's not off the top of my head. Also, Beckham's free kick at World Cup qualifying.
To send
England to the World Cup in 06, that was a big one too.
World Cup game. I'll agree with you. Roberto Carlos and Ronaldo.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, we also have some big shockers that happened in the World Cup. A lot of upsets. Speaking of the Messi Ronaldo debate, Argentina drew 1-1 against Iceland. And I don't think it'd be big news if it was just a 1-1 draw, but it was a 1-1 draw because Messi missed a penalty to take it up 2-1.
Yeah.
And that it was a poorly taken penalty. That is just honestly, and let me be real here. I do not like the whole narrative of like this World Cup is Messi versus Ronaldo. And I kind of blame Fox for pushing that narrative a bit in the United States. But you can't deny the fact that not only is most of the coverage centered around the two of them, but most of the excitement is around the two of them. You know, we can't help but put these players up on a pedestal. We're witnessing two of the greatest athletes in the world at the peak of their powers in the age of Twitter. is a big specification on that. So, like, my opinion is, let's just enjoy them both. Take them for what they are. They play differently. Let's take them for who they are, what they are. But it is hard to not, I mean, it's hard to not, not be like, oof, all right, Messi, it's time for you to respond. I was in a group chat with some friends of mine, and that was the whole narrative. It was like, all right, Messi, you're up tomorrow. You're up next. How do you respond, you know? And you know that he watches the games, and you know he's aware of the narrative. So it's an interesting one. Anything else you guys want to say about Ronaldo or Messi in that sense? Because I think that's the biggest storyline that's been leading the World Cup in terms of mega news.
It definitely Fox has been pushing Messi, Ronaldo. And I think that's what a lot of people have tuned into the World Cup for, is to see these two giants go head-to-head. And I do agree with you. We should just enjoy seeing two great athletes at the peak of their powers, you know, go head-to-head. But, I mean, both of them are pretty much equal. I mean, 5 Ballon d'Ors between the two of them. Almost equal Champions Leagues. Almost equal La Liga titles. I think Messi may have more. I don't know.
Ronaldo has more Champions Leagues, for sure.
Definitely has more Champions Leagues. So, I mean, it's between the two of them, and none of them have won a World Cup. And Ronaldo is coming off a fantastic Euro 2014. So, really, we have to see Messi come up. Like, that's the one thing I'm waiting for. Messi has been praised. People call him the Messiah. He's, you know, the next Maradona. But Maradona delivered. You know, Maradona brought home the World Cup. So his legacy does hinge upon winning this World Cup. And for you to be drawing with Iceland with a penalty to seal the game, you have to look at it. You have to look at it and say, okay, what's happening here? Are we really seeing him playing well? And I think the trouble is that he's so instrumental in club football for Barcelona that it doesn't transfer over to the World Cup season.
And like, while I disagree with you that I think his legacy will be determined by this World Cup, I disagree on that, because I feel like to judge a player of that caliber on one trophy and stuff or whatever is absurd, but I understand where it comes from. I am with you on that whole, is he a product of Barcelona? Like, is he as good as people say he is, or is he just a product of the Barcelona system? Because that's a very interesting concept, and I think that when his career is over requires a full-fledged bird-eye view from above and analyzing that. Now, going back to his psychoanalysis stuff, I truly believe that he is still psychologically affected from losing the World Cup in 2014 final, and from losing back-to-back Copa Americas on penalties in 2015 and 2016. Like, that has a serious psychological effect, and I don't think he's gotten over it. That's what I see when I watch him play. I watch him play with a burden. I don't watch him play with the energy and excitement of wanting to go and win. I see him playing.
Feels like he's pressing.
I agree. It feels rough. It feels like it's a forceful thing.
Because you knew when he stepped up to that penalty, you knew he wasn't. At least I thought. I just looked in his face. He didn't look confident stepping up.
And he didn't take it confidently. It was a poorly taken penalty kick. Like, it's not something that I expected from him. Let's move on to another storyline, because we got a bunch of stuff to take care of in different games and stuff. I think a big surprise also is Russia being the first country to qualify for the knockout rounds, and in the style that they qualified for the knockout rounds. I think
I need folks to blow the whistle, because where did Russia come from? Like. Where did all of that come from? That's what I want to know. I saw Russia, Saudi Arabia, first game, and I was like, it's probably going to be like 1-1, 1-0 Russia. I was like, it's probably going to be that crazy. 5-0, first game? I was like, wait a minute, hold up.
And then, a 3-1 against Mo Salah and Egypt in the second game. Insane.
So insane. Mm-hmm. I did not expect that from Russia. And they all are very mature players. I mean, the core of it, like a lot of veteran players playing together. And I just never expected Russia to one, come out of that group, really, but to completely annihilate that group in the way they did.
Mm-hmm.
Just, my gosh.
Amazing. Yeah, to refresh, Group A is already confirmed with who's going through. It's a matter of placement. It is Uruguay has moved on, and Russia has moved on. And honestly, if there is a draw, it'll be Russia as the first team simply for goal difference. Because they, like we said, annihilated Saudi Arabia. Another storyline here is I feel like we have to talk about Germany-Mexico. Germany-Mexico. Mexico, as much as I'm not a fan of the team, because I'm a supporter of the U.S. national team, and that's a big rival, I feel like the Mexican team completely outplayed Germany. Germany did not show up. Juan Carlos Osorio, the Mexican manager, his tactics were impeccable. He was super defensive, and when he threw on Rafa Márquez in the 72nd minute, I thought, oh, this game's over, because they put six defenders and then they put Rafa Márquez in front of that line of six defenders, and nothing was going through. And for the next 25 minutes, nothing went through. It was a beautiful way to kill off the game. And hats off to Mexico and to that federation. They really showed up and they really belonged. Very, very, very much hats off to them. I'm just going through the games here, Zach and Tyler. Any specific other games that stand out to you? Ooh, okay, hold on. Let's take a second and talk. Brazil-Switzerland drawing 1-1, which was big.
That was huge.
Mm-hmm.
This has been the most amazing World Cup I've ever seen, because there are teams that on any other night would thrash other teams.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, if you saw Brazil-Switzerland as a friendly, you were like, okay, that's Brazil's winning that.
Mm-hmm.
You would have been no doubt in your mind. You would have been
Brazil's. Right. Mm-hmm.
For them to draw, I sat there and I couldn't believe what I was watching. This has been the most surprising World Cup I've ever witnessed.
Well, the interesting thing about that game to me was that Brazil dominated the first 25 minutes. They looked like the Brazil that we expected to see. And then after Coutinho's goal, they kind of got comfortable.
Yeah.
And they kind of sat back, and Switzerland said, oh, this is our chance. And they took advantage, you know, and set pieces. Big theme is teams do not practice defending set pieces. I don't understand. Free kicks, corners.
I also think the defense that's being played this World Cup has been poor.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
I don't think teams have really stepped up in the defensive end to protect the ball, to prevent the ball from coming through. I think that...
With the exception of Mexico.
With the exception of Mexico.
Yeah, because we have to pay our respects to that. They're playing outstanding.
I think the way in which the referees have been working in terms of what's actually being called as a foul, what's not being called as a foul, what deserves a yellow card and a red card. I think Colombia got a red card for a handball the other day.
Oof, that's still fresh. That's still a fresh wound, my friend.
And I was like, really? For handball, red card?
In the fourth minute?
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought it was the third minute. I watched that game. It was...
Tyler, we don't need your specifics, okay?
I was just a phone call, so I think with now back to Brazil Switzerland, I think that Brazil definitely, as you say, got comfortable, and I think they expected Switzerland to fall apart. But I also think they played complacent football. They were just tapping around. They were expecting some sort of magic to happen rather than really working it in. And obviously, I mean, we have so many flair players for Brazil. I mean, Coutinho, Neymar, Marcelo. I mean, probably expected that someone would have
flanked Coutinho,
would have gone through. So I think this World Cup has been definitive in showing teams that are built with strong players that are tenacious, that won't stop. I mean, Iceland, Argentina was a big one. I mean, that team was built to take down Argentina.
Yeah.
I mean, Giants.
Big. Oh, yeah. We can't disrespect Iceland in defensive as well. Like, we said with the exception of Mexico, but Iceland as well has great defense.
I think what's happened is these smaller countries have know these bigger countries so much better, and they understand that what the personnel that have to be here to win the game or get a result.
That is a great take, Zach. That is a great take.
Their squads around these teams. I definitely believe Mexico spent weeks crafting this team.
Oh, I saw a tweet that said, "Don't ever give Juan Carlos Osorio, their manager, 7 months to prepare for anything."
You had 7 months, so you went in with squad selection. You're like, I'm finding the perfect squad to take down this German team. And he found it, knew what to put in place. He came in with the game plan, and they executed amazingly. So I think that's what's happening, is these smaller countries believe they have a shot. A shot at winning. So
it's exciting. Okay, before I want to mention one more game before I bring you in, Tyler, to ask you your opinion on some stuff. But Zach, quickly, because you know we're running out of time here. Tyler got to get going. Who is your favorite player on this Three Lions squad? Because this is a fresh squad. This is a brand new face, England. Yeah. I know you support England.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite?
El Capitano, Harry Kane.
Harry Kane, he's one of our own. Captain Harry Kane, a brace in his first World Cup game. Again, set pieces.
You got hammered this home, I think, all of the tournament.
Mm-hmm. You think what? What'd you say, Tyler?
I think you're gonna hammer the point of defending set pieces all tournament.
Yeah, it's
ridiculous. Like, if there's one thing that you can control, it is set pieces.
Yeah. Like,
it is literally a moment where you can be on the training pitch and say, "Okay, we're gonna take our corners like this. We're gonna defend our corners like this," and you can spend the whole practice doing it. Like, I don't understand. Granted, this is international football and the teams are not together as often as club soccer, but you gotta practice that. It's inexcusable.
Unexcusable, in my opinion.
Zach, I think Belgium and England are the teams that have surprised me the most. England looks rejuvenated. I don't see how I was talking about that whole Messi playing with a burden. I don't see that. The England teams of the past have had that, and I don't see that with this team. It's a young squad, fresh-faced, led by Harry Kane. There's some flair. Raheem Sterling, Jesse Lingard, Jordan Henderson being a rock in the midfield. Like, it's a good squad, man. It's a really good squad. And then you got players like Rashford coming off the bench, your boy from Man U. Like, it's a squad, and I think they can go far. They can do well. My teams that have stood out to me in that first round were Mexico, Belgium, yeah. England, and then going up, that's pretty much. Oh, and not Portugal, but Cristiano Ronaldo. Tyler, go ahead. Give us your non-soccer junkie like Zach and I are, outsiders take on your World Cup. I know you got to get going, so.
I've been thoroughly impressed. Like, it's been a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's just interesting. I love being able to just flip on the TV and there's a game on, and like, especially for me, just trying to get into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to watch different teams and then just remember what you've told me about teams.
Mm-hmm.
And the upsets have been interesting to me. Because I don't think I have the favorites as built up in my mind as you guys probably do, because I don't follow soccer as much, and I'm trying to change that. But it's very interesting. I think Zach made a very interesting point that was very interesting take about how the smaller countries have prepared a lot better this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a real blast to watch. And it's been really interesting to see star players It's just very, I don't know. I can't really describe it other than much that it's been very fun to watch, and that I'm a huge fan of the favorites not looking as good, and the smaller countries getting wins over them.
Look at you.
Very interesting.
Look at you being a group of five advocate.
Yeah, that's me. noted group of five advocate, Tyler. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Zach, I think you might enjoy this story, but part of the reason that's helped me get, my girlfriend is also really into soccer, so she's mm-hmm. helped me as well. And she said I was telling her when I was watching the England game, I was telling her that I was watching it. And she's like, yeah, my mom really wants, she said that my mom really wants England to lose because they kept Wayne Rooney off the squad.
That's such an old head take.
I was like, yeah, sure.
Does she know that Wayne Rooney hasn't been on the squad for a year now?
I don't know. My girlfriend is like, I don't care about that part mm-hmm. in particular. Yeah, it's been fun though. It's been, I've learned a lot. Mm-hmm. I have a question for you, Sergio.
Oh, okay.
Are you still sticking with your Brazil is winning the World Cup take?
I am sticking with it because I feel like in those first 25 minutes, they really showed who they really can be. I feel like if they just don't take their foot off the gas, they're the most dangerous team in the World Cup. That front six is too powerful. Paulinho's a rock in the midfield. Renato Augusto comes off the bench like we saw in the last game. Gabriel Jesus, he is a menace striker. And if one of them can't go, oh, yeah, by the way, you got Roberto Firmino coming off the bench. You got Willian, my favorite, arguably my favorite winger on earth right now. Like, to me, watching Willian play is like watching a Italian chef make pasta by hand. It's beautiful.
Interesting analogy.
And it's taken me five players to even get to Neymar. Like, that to me is a sign. It's taken me five players before I mentioned Neymar, who, let's hope he's fully fit, because I'm going to be real with you, he did not look fully fit towards the end of that game. He should have come out in the 60th, 70th minute and put on some fresher legs, because they have the talent. Why risk further injury when you have the sufficient talent to get it done in the first group stage game? I just don't – that's all another topic. But, yes, Tyler, I am sticking with Brazil to win the World Cup. I'm also sticking with Peru to beat France later on today at 11 a.m. Zach, don't shake your head, my man.
You're going to die on that take?
I will be guillotined on that take.
Yeah. They will lay you to rest right next to on your right will be Mo Salah's World Cup appearance, mm-hmm. and on your left will be the United States men's national team.
And behind me will be Kawhi Leonard's popularity among Spurs fans.
Sure, back.
All right. With that being said, please watch the World Cup, guys. It's such an outstanding tournament.
It's so much fun.
You're missing out if you're not. You're really missing out if you're not.
Belgium for the win.
Oh, Zach got Belgium. I was going to ask you, who you got?
I got Belgium.
Okay.
My dad is a huge Belgium guy right now.
Mm-hmm. Zach, real question. How far does England go? And what would be considered a good tournament?
Semis.
A good tournament? Or that's how far they go?
Semis would be a good tournament.
Semis
would be realistic.
With this team, they have
semis. I think that team can get to the quarterfinals and semifinals. I mean, winning it would be, you know, the
Listen. We'll revisit that. We'll revisit that later on if that does happen to be so.
You'll be back if England wins. You'll be back.
You'll be back. You'll be back.
If England get through the round of 16, I'll be back.
True.
I'm with that.
I'm with that.
Can you make the quarterfinals?
I think they can get to the quarterfinals. Mm-hmm. I would love for England to get to the semis, but I don't think that would be. I think in England, a successful tournament would be winning it.
Well, England, y'all got crazy expectations, but
But getting to the quarterfinals would be my ideal, sign for England. Okay. But getting through the knockout stages is the biggest part for us. I think that's always been our worst part of the World Cup, is getting knocked out by some team or some crazy thing happening. I mean, the worst one would be 2010 against Germany.
Mm-hmm. When Lampard actually scored a goal, but they didn't count it. Okay, before we move on to our moments of the week, did no one get my guillotine reference? Peru's playing France. I said I will guillotine on this take. No one got that? Really, guys?
I was so committed to my I will lay you to rest next to Mo Salah and the men's national team.
Which was a high quality take. Which was a high quality.
I'm sorry. I was so committed to that I just jumped in right as you were done. I didn't actually listen.
Okay.
I took it literally the figuratively that you were trying to make it into.
Oh my God. Okay. That's been our World Cup first round preview. Let's go ahead and move on to moments of the week. Zach, you are our guest this week. We would like for you to go ahead and give us your moment of the week.
It would have to be Harry Kane's second goal against Tunisia.
Mm.
Just
scenes.
Ballistic. I legit lost my voice screaming.
So did all of London and all of England. Oh my
gosh.
Mm-hmm.
We should have won that game anyway.
Mm, oh my God, y'all should have been up 3-4-0 in the first half.
Should have won that game anyway. Mm-hmm. And so after the penalty, I was like, okay, this is messed up. Then there's a couple of calls that I wasn't a fan of. Mm-hmm. And then to win it in like the last minute, it was like 93rd minute, 4 minutes of stoppage time. And to score that. And the whole game, he had been just lingering by the far post. He wasn't really striking it. He was just waiting like a poacher. And
I was gonna say he was poaching. Yeah, he was being a poacher.
And that it was fantastic. I would say that. Nice. That was my moment of the week.
Tyler, moment of the week.
I'm gonna branch out from soccer because we've been talking a lot of that today. I'm gonna go with Jackson Kowar. Had 13 strikeouts.
Attaboy.
Against Texas, in the College World Series in an elimination game to move Florida on, keep us alive. But yeah, 13 strikeouts on 121 pitches to defeat noted, hated school by Sergio, Texas.
Second only to Florida State. Yes, that was good. And that's not a game that I watched because I was doing rehearsals and stuff and my performances, but I was on Twitter, and Twitter was lit, to say the least. Twitter was having a
my favorite part though, like my favorite part is like one of the last innings he like struck out he struck out the last guy of the inning with like two people on base, and he straight up like went crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like he went insane. He was so pumped. That's my favorite part, because baseball needs more emotion.
Yeah, we next week we'll go ahead and talk more about the College World Series. We've been focusing a lot on the World Cup, but we also gotta realize our Gators are close to winning a title.
Yeah.
So we got to talk about that next week, Tyler. Just a little mental note there. All right, my moment of the week is twofold. First one is a little bit bad, in my opinion. It is Landon Donovan holding, it was revered to be the greatest U.S. soccer player of all time, holding up a Mexico scarf saying, "I stand with Mexico," as part of a Wells Fargo World Cup ad. And we, the American soccer Twitter, ripped him apart, and rightfully so. I think if you want to support another team, that's fine. If you're Mexican-American and want to support both, that's completely fine. Nothing against the country of Mexico, nothing against Mexican-Americans. I just don't like El Tri, the soccer team, but it's a rivalry thing. To me, that would be like if a Yankees legend said, you know what, we didn't make the playoffs, but the Red Sox won the AL East, so let's go ahead and support the Red Sox in the playoffs this year. What? In what world? In what world is that a thing? No.
Also, but like, yeah, I mean, like, even if he did, I know it was for, like, sponsorship and whatever, but, like, just don't tell people that you're supporting them.
I know. And then he did a whole Twitter thing. And then Carlos Bocanegra, who was his teammate, quoted the tweet and said, "What?" And then he responded, and he attacked his Mexican-American heritage. He was like, you of all, Landon was saying to Bocanegra, he said, you of all people should be understanding of this. Your father's a Mexican, your father's is of Mexican heritage. You have a Mexican father, you know, and he was talking about how he wants to build bridges and not divide. Our countries are divided enough that we shouldn't be divided like this, whatever, which true. Yes, completely get it. But the thing is, it's sport and you got to be able to separate the sport and the rivalry from the political disaster that is going on. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. Yeah. My positive one is watching all of the Latin American countries listen to their national anthem at the World Cup stage. Watching Peru, the Peru stadium in the game against Denmark, watching their team sing the national anthem with their fans with so much heart and emotion after 36 years of not being there. Watching Panama sing the world, sing their anthem for the first time at a World Cup. Watching Colombia, country of like my family's origin. I'm standing in the kitchen and I have tears in my eyes watching Colombia, listening to that anthem. It's very passionate. And in a time where we in the United States, there's a lot of controversy about the anthem. To me, it's a beautiful moment of how a piece of music designed to unite an entire country does its job. I'm of the take, and I know this is a very hot take in this country, but I am of the take where we play the national anthem way too much here. I think we overplay it at all of our sporting events. I don't think we should play it as much because it dilutes it, because then we have moments like the World Cup where you play it and you feel that emotion. And you feel that, and you feel a part of the country, you know, and you're proud of where you're from. I also think we should, America the Beautiful should be our national anthem, but that's a whole other topic. But, you know, and it was nice to see these countries being represented on the World Cup stage and seeing these players so proud to put on the colors and their national team jerseys. And it was a good example of how the anthem can unite us rather than divide us, rather, whether it be, even though the reason it divides us here is unjust and it's ridiculous as to why it divides us, but it was a nice moment in a positive light to see that, especially at such an international stage for the World Cup. And also, you know, Peru, my stepdad's country, it was nice. I got a picture of him. He took a picture of him watching the anthem and he had tears in his eyes, you know, like it's those things. It's first time in 36 years, Panama, first time ever hearing those.
I was on the verge of tears when Panama was singing there.
It was great. That to me is my moment of the week. It's part of why I love the World Cup too. This sport is everything. I love it. I really love this. I love soccer so much. Those are my moments of the week, gentlemen. I think that is all the time that we have for today. Zach, thank you so much for coming on, my man.
Thanks.
And guaranteed, if England makes it to the quarterfinals, you'll be back on. We'll be talking some more 3 Live.
England get knocked out, I'll probably be here too.
Zach, our World Cup correspondent for Sideline Judgment.
I wish I could like we could all be together so I could watch a game with you two. And like
I watch and let me be real, I watch the Peru and the Colombia games, and if the US was in it, the US games very differently than how I watch every other game. Every other game I sit back and I analyze and I'm like, oh, that was good, or I'm always going for the sake of narrative. Peru, Colombia, and if the World Cup was in it, and if the US was in it, the US? Oh no. Don't go near me. Tyler, you remember that Florida State game? You guys remember that Florida State game, the last Florida State game that Zach and I were at? And yeah. How angry I was in the second quarter when we had a genuine chance of coming back and playing well, but it was just incompetence?
Yeah.
That's how I am with these games. Especially that Columbia game, because...
That must have been tough.
We'll talk about it later on after the group stage when I have time to digest it. All right, so Zach, thank you so much for coming on, my man. We'll have you back soon. We're our World Cup correspondent. Very happy with that. We'll send your contract over. Don't worry.
gotta add it to your Twitter bio now. Official Sideline Judgment World Cup correspondent.
Gotta add it, my man. All right, well, this has been another episode of Sideline Judgment. My name is Sergio.
My name is Tyler.
Zach.
Zach.
Hey, we're not biased, but what is it? What are we doing this time? We're doing go Colombia, go Peru, go England, and go Gators.
Yeah, go all those things.
And go soccer.